And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces. For our last half hour, we're going to be speaking with State Representative Angelica Rubio. Thanks so much for joining us.
No, thank you for the invite. I appreciate it.
So you are coming back from what I thought was one of the most successful legislative sessions in several years. You had a key role in two of the bills that got, well, not bills, but pieces of legislation that got through this year. One of them was the Immigrant Safety Act, and we'll get to that one later. But I wanted to start with House Joint Resolution that will, and all that means is it's a constitutional amendment, that will allow legislators to get paid. And this is an issue that I have been talking about, writing about ever since I first went up to the legislature almost 20 years ago, well, more than 20 years ago, I guess now. And you have as well. Just give people a little bit of your history on this. You were first elected in 2018. 2019, your very first year, you were co-sponsor of a resolution that died on the floor. The next year, 2020, you weren't part of that, or there wasn't anything that year. 2021, you were part of a resolution that made it to Senate Judiciary. 2022 was the COVID year. 2023, you were part of a joint resolution that died on the floor. 2024, part of a joint resolution died on the floor. 2025, part of a joint resolution that died in Rules Committee. 2026, part of a joint resolution that that passed. And so that's how things work in the New Mexico legislature. You try, and you try again. And part of that is because of what we are talking about. You meet for 30 days and 60 days, and you all have other things in your life, and it's a, you know, and it takes years and years and years and years to get anything done up there. And so, first of all, congratulations for your persistence on that. But why, obviously, you went into it initially feeling that the system needed to be changed.
Yeah, thanks. And thank you for re-traumatizing me. I was actually elected in 2016. And so first memorial that I introduced was in 2017. And yeah, it's been a decades long challenge to get this through. Incredibly grateful because last summer, with the elections of new senators, senators up north, that really made the difference to get this over the finish line. And so that's been that was an amazing feat. But yeah, I mean, when I first ran for this seat in 2016, a lot of the conversations that I was having, first, it was hard for me to decide to run for this seat because I don't come from wealth or anything like that. And so to take on a role like this was already going to be a significant sacrifice. And then when I started to meet with constituents in the district about my running, that's when this issue started to really come about, is asking why were we the only unpaid legislature in the country? And I think that was really where this whole idea catapulted in the fact that I'm really someone who likes to look at systems and how systems impact communities, particularly communities that have been historically disenfranchised. And this is one of those democracy issues that I felt needed to be addressed, because so much of the policies that we debate and discuss up in Santa Fe don't always center the communities that they directly impact. And those are the folks that need to be representing us in Santa Fe.
So now the challenge is getting it passed through by the voters, and the challenge there is getting voters, convincing voters to pay for something that they've been getting for free. So what is the argument going to be? Why if I'm a taxpayer, why should my taxes be going to this and not to parks and all the other things the taxes go to?
Right. I mean, I want to encourage folks to really be thoughtful about this issue. We have about 8 months before the election in November where this question will be on the ballot. And the question is essentially, do you support changing the Constitution to allow for salaries and that it's up to median income, New Mexico household median income? And that means that we decided to do it this way this year because if New Mexicans are doing well, then obviously, the legislators will see that in their salaries. But if New Mexicans are not, then then neither will legislators. And so that was one of the reasons that we decided to do that as well. But also, I think people need to really be thoughtful about this issue in the sense that we do not there's so much work that we've amazing work that we've done as legislators. And I'm proud of a lot of the work that I've done, but it has come at a sacrifice personally, but also a sacrifice to communities that we've had to bypass certain things because we just react. We're constantly reacting to issues instead of thinking 5-10 years ahead of us. And so paying a salary, it's I know it's going to be something that folks are going to have to really think about, but I hope that they're thinking about this in the greater good of the state, that if we are currently ranked at the lowest in a lot of different areas, that it's a lot of it has to do with the fact that we just don't have time to prioritize. And frankly, there's just legislators in this legislature who like the status quo, and it works and it serves them.
Well,
and
of course, one thing it serves is having privileged people be in control. Because if you have privileges and finances, you can be in the legislature. But one piece of it that I really think most people don't get that you could flesh out is how much work you guys do other than during the session. I mean, there are committee hearings in different places around the state. Tell folks about that.
Yeah, so under the Constitution, we as legislators are supposed to meet 30 and 60 days every other year. This year, it was a 30-day session, and it allows only the governor to be able to give an agenda for the 30-day session. And so a lot of times, we're having to wait almost 2 years to work on stuff. And so in between that time, though, a lot of us are actively in the community working with constituents on a number of issues. I know in the last few years with the issues around housing, there have been folks who've been struggling to find housing or to sustain their housing. And so just because the session ended 2 weeks ago today, doesn't mean that our work ended. And for some legislators, yes, they do go home. They don't want to have to deal with the legislature anymore. But for many of us who are very deeply committed to the community, our work is 365 days out of the year. And there's a lot of travel. We drive a lot around the state to attend interim committees, to do homework in preparation for the next year. And there's a lot of miles that we put on our vehicles, a lot of wear and tear, things like that, that we don't get anything in return. It's really for those of us who do consistently participate actively in the legislature. There is a lot that we put in because we love the state, we love our communities, and we're willing to do that.
And I would just add, for people who do have the wealth, the reason they oppose this is because it reduces the competition. In the last Senate election, of the 42 seats, there were only contested races, Republicans against Democrats, in 15. 15 out of 42 seats, which means all the other ones got a free pass, which means they don't have to do town hall meetings. They don't have to talk to their constituents. They don't have to worry about it. And so that's why, if you don't need the money, if you are financially secure, it is in your interest not to have this go through, because you get to keep going back year after year after year without having to face a challenger.
An incredible proportion of the legislators seem to be either lawyers who tend to run for office because it gets their name out there for, you know, legal practice, or retirees.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those places where it I mean, I don't have any ill will towards any of my colleagues in the legislature. Many of them have become very close friends, colleagues. We've worked really well to pass really good policy. But as somebody who has been working in the community, who believes in good governance and democracy, and upholding a lot of the values around democracy, we've seen it nationally where we're stuck with really bad candidates for president and so for in the legislature, I feel like even in primaries, New Mexico, even just the way that the whole state has redistricted,
right.
It would even allow for even more competitive primaries, which I personally think is exciting. I know I don't want to do this forever. I would love for somebody else to come on. I don't want to hand this seat, obviously, over to somebody who's going to move with the status quo. But it would be exciting to just see somebody from, like, Chiva Town or somewhere from our neighborhood to be able to take on this issue and to take on the legislature and be able to afford to do
so. And I think of people like Bill McCamley, who, you know, was being criticized and ridiculed because he was spending all of his time as a legislator. And, well, why don't you have a job? Why aren't you? Really? I mean, you're responsible for a how many billion-dollar budget? And we're asking him why he's not spending his time, you know, working at a grocery store or something? I mean, it's crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like there's a disconnect at times. But I think as legislators, we also have to be better about how we talk about these issues with our constituents. Our constituents are going through a lot right now, especially economically. Fair. I think when it comes to everything that's happening at the federal level specifically, there's just a loss of confidence in our public officers. And so I think, I mean, and this is some of the education we're going to have to do between now and November, is that a lot of New Mexicans, over 60%, believe that we already make a salary here in New Mexico. Mm. And they think that that salary is over $75,000. But then when we tell them that we don't make a salary, that we're actually the only volunteer legislator in the legislature in the country, they actually are surprised by that and support.
Right.
They go, the second the questions after that are like, oh yeah, I absolutely support paying legislators.
Right.
And so we've been able, I've shared some of my ideas around what that campaign should look like moving forward into November. And so I'm really excited about just the opportunity to have these conversations with constituents. And that's why I ask folks to just be really thoughtful about it, because, yes, it's a really important issue. We will be changing the Constitution, but I also see this as an exciting opportunity mm-hmm. to really mobilize folks and to really just have some really good conversations around good democracy and what that could look like for New Mexico and good governance.
Do we have any sense of how popular or unpopular this is going in?
I mean, I think it's more popular than it was 10 years ago, which is when we first mm-hmm. really started pushing this issue. I think that there are just, I think here in Las Cruces specifically, I think there's a lot of support for it. I mean, mm-hmm. it's what I ran on in my first term, mm-hmm. and I've continuously been able to win on this issue. And so I think that there's just greater awareness of it. And my hope is that if we can sort of allow for folks to have this debate and just really think about it, I think would be
great. Speaking of the debate about it, one thing I've heard, and would like you to correct me if I'm wrong or comment if I'm right, is that Republicans opposed it in the Senate and House, partly so that they could use it as a campaign issue against Democrats and, you know, say you guys are greedy, you want for salaries. Does that seem to be true? And what's your view on that?
I mean, there will definitely be opposition, because I think that even, you know, lobbyists, corporate lobbyists specifically, have a lot of power in the Roundhouse. And so they're obviously going to counter a mm-hmm. lot of this. Of course, the opposition Republicans will also probably use it. I will say, though, that despite how lefty I am, I do have relationships with folks on the mm-hmm. other side of the aisle, and they have told me privately how they would really appreciate a salary, because mm-hmm. it is hard to do this job. Yeah, and right. so they want to be able to represent their constituents. And if you look at the makeup of the Republican Party here in New Mexico, I mean, they have a hard time recruiting good candidates.
They
and
have
so I think this is also helping. I mean, as somebody on the left, I definitely don't want to, like, give them any. I don't want a stronger Republican
but it's
Party.
About good government, but
that's
but,
about that's yeah. about the checks and balances that we are. We want to.
And that's the main point. I think people should understand that this is a balance of power, that any power that the legislature cedes goes to the governor. That's just exactly how it works. And so up until a couple of years ago, you guys couldn't even have staff.
Right.
I mean, it was this completely amateur, intentionally weak body so that the governor would have more power. You still only meet 30 and 60 days. I mean, there's still a lot of things that have to happen to modernize the legislature, but a salary being no longer being the only state right. in the country that does it this way.
Right. I mean, I think the modernization piece is a really important piece. This doesn't solve all of our problems as a state, paying the legislature, but it definitely begins, at least puts us at a baseline of where we can, what we can do for our communities.
And I did want to get into the Immigration Safety Act as well. Well, first of all, why don't you start by just explaining what it is and what it will do?
Right. So the House Bill 9, which was the Immigrant Safety Act, is a piece of legislation that was passed this last session. A number of versions of it has been introduced in the past. I introduced one of the first pieces back in 2017. And it is basically to address this entanglement that we have here in the state with the use of immigration detention as a form of profit in New Mexico. And through the legislation, House Bill 9, it's become very, 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 very narrowed down, and which is why we were able to get the support that we've had this last year, particularly with the increase in immigration detention, how violent it has been, how expanded it has been. That legislation has been able to, we were able to pass it. It's going to impact three detention facilities here in New Mexico, strictly around the immigration detention. And I'm really proud of that legislation. There's a huge coalition around that. And a lot of work over the course of the last decade.
That's one for me personally that I kind of originally had mixed feelings on. Because the argument that I think has some merit is that we have to hold these people. We're going to hold these people somewhere. I won't use the words have to, but we're going to. And isn't it better that we do it in a place that we know is humane and has standards? And I think, yes, there's some merit to that argument. But once I saw what went down in Minneapolis and everywhere else, I'm like, okay, no.
I think also what's really important is the fact that every other state that has passed this sort of legislation has shown that it has minimized detention in general. Hmm. And detaining immigrants for civil issues is not, it's not right. Mm-hmm. And so I think that at New Mexico playing a part in this role not only minimizes detention of immigrants and these awful and heinous and violent entrapments that they've been involved in, which, by the way, I am one of the legislators who have constantly said this isn't an issue about Trump. This has happened mm-hmm. under the Biden administration. This has happened under the Obama administration. It goes as far back as mm-hmm. 2001 when 9/11 happened, the start of the Department of Homeland Security. There is a huge, long timeline of how we have treated immigrants in this country, and New Mexico should not be in that business.
Offbeat question, maybe. But it is amazing to think it's 10 years now since you first, you know, this is 2026. And, you know, you were a young, idealistic firebrand. Now you're still a relatively young
idealistic
firebrand.
I was going to say, where are you going with this, Peter?
How do you feel you've changed? What do you feel you've learned, aside from specific political issues?
I mean, thank you for that question. You know, I don't feel like I've changed much in terms of my politics. I feel like I've really held on to my values serving in the legislature. What I have seen is that the legislature, as the opposition likes to say, that we're this radical legislature in New Mexico. I wish we were as radical as they think that we are.
Well, I'm asking more in terms, not
right.
so much.
And
the
so that's where, but that's ideology, where I'm, and but, that's where I'm heading is, yeah. is that. I feel like I when I first came into this legislature, I wanted to be the heart of my Democratic mm-hmm. caucus. Like, I wanted to ensure that people didn't forget why they were Democrats, why they believed in the things that they believed in. And that piece, I think, has gotten harder because I think I don't look at elections every 2 years. I look at where I want to go in the future, mm-hmm. what kind of community I want to live in. That's not necessarily how politics operates. And so I think that is where mm-hmm. That's where the difference has been for me, where I've had to learn how to not only see the legislature as a tool for change, but also keeping in mind that community organizing, mutual aid, mobilizing our communities outside of policy is really where the power is.
Can you talk a little bit about what are you looking forward to? I mean, let me shift gears and ask you a little bit about private prisons, because I know that's another one that you came in and you've been working on right from the start, and make a very credible argument that if you have an incentive to lock people up, a financial incentive, you're going to go out and lock more people up. I mean, and the frustrating thing to me following that is people don't tend to disagree with that. They simply say, well, it will devastate these towns. It's the biggest employer. It's the only thing we've got. So even though we don't like the system, we feel like we're kind of stuck with it.
Yeah, I mean, I see the issue with private prisons the way that I see issues like Project Jupiter and our dependence on oil and gas, that we have a lack of vision as policymakers when it comes to economic development and really thinking about the future of this state and the communities. I believe in innovation, but I believe in also a sustainable economy that can withstand a lot of the issues that we're all facing. And so I don't see the issue of private prisons different than our dependence on oil and gas, or different than this issue that we're facing now with Project Jupiter. It's all this sense of we sort of like to pin ourselves to one thing, to this really shiny, beautiful thing. And that's what's devastating our communities. It's not the industry itself. Mm. It's this mindset that we have as policymakers, that because we're so reliant on, we're always thinking about the next election, and we're also right. We're always thinking about jobs and how, but we're not actually thinking about the future of a community. And that's what I feel the private prison industry has done. It's what the devastation that oil and gas has done in the southeastern part of the state and in the northwestern part of the state, and what I believe Project Jupiter will do for us here in Doñana County in southern New Mexico.
Talk for a moment about Project Jupiter, specifically how you view it, what the balance, the real balance will be in your view between economic help, if any, and pollution, and what do you think the chances are the New Mexico Environmental Department will decline to give Project Jupiter the okay it needs?
I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. Hmm. Honestly, I feel like last January when we were up at the 60-day session, there were a number of committee hearings where we were being asked to hear legislation that I thought was questionable. I didn't understand why we were having to hear this legislation. And months later, realizing that, oh, it was because there was this whole process unraveling without that being transparent to even those of us in the legislature. Mm-hmm. I voted against these bills, but because of those issues, is that everything has been so secretive and so deceptive. And I think part of what happened with the county in September, and I don't necessarily blame the entire the county commission, because I think that they might have been duped as well, mm-hmm. is that there was this betrayal in our community. That, and this is why I think it's going to be harder to have conversations about good governance and democracy moving forward, because of the lack of trust that our community is going to have with their elected officials after what happened with Project Jupiter. Right. I don't know what's going to happen with the applications for the air quality. I hope that the state denies those applications, because I mean, it's already one thing, the issue that we have with water. Water is going to be an incredible mm-hmm. issue this year. But the fact that the pollution that will come from this gas infrastructure to power these data centers, I'm baffled. There's moments where I just can't believe Absolutely. That this is something that we committed to.
We're reaching the end of our time with you, unfortunately. What else have we not asked you that you'd like to mention to people in the last minute or so?
I mean, I would just ask folks to, what you started the conversation, Walt. This was a very successful 30-day session, and by successful, I mean we got a lot of work done, and I think it had to do with just so much homework that we did prior to the session. And I just want to encourage our listeners and to constituents that part of the reason that this legislature was able to accomplish so much is because we have legislators now who come from community. And so I really encourage folks to stay involved, to keep getting being a part of this process, and to not and not to give up on our process.
Well, we've been talking with state legislator, state representative Angelica Rubio, and hope to talk with you again soon.